We've been hearing about shortages of critical medical supplies, and the biggest deficit is in the need for ventilators. You've been asking us a lot of questions about how the disease affects the lungs and how ventilators can help. We're going to spend this next part of the program answering as many of them as we can. Joining us now is Dr. Meilan Han, a pulmonologist at the University of Michigan Hospital in Ann Arbor, and also NPR Science correspondent John Hamilton. Good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Hey, Ari.
So before we start answering listener questions, Dr. Han, can you just briefly describe what a ventilator does exactly so that we're all on the same page?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we first have to think about what our lungs actually do. Our lungs get oxygen in for us, and they get carbon dioxide waste product out for us. So when we think about trying to help out the lungs with a ventilator, we need to do both of those things. We need to get oxygen in, and we use that by piping in gases of higher concentration than are in room air. But there's also a mechanical bellows function to the ventilator that helps physically move air in and out to help patients breathe.
Hmm. Okay, well, our first question here comes from Lo in Oakland, California.
I'd like to know what percentage of people who require ventilation go on to actually survive. It's inherently risky, so I just want to know, basically, hopefully by age breakdown, if you could tell us what percentage of people survive after ventilation. Thanks.
I think this is not a very encouraging number. Dr. Han, once people are on a ventilator, what are their chances of survival?
Well, it really depends on the reason they got on the ventilator in the first place. So some things turn around quite quickly. Obviously, the area of concern for tonight is COVID-19. Unfortunately, the numbers are pretty grim. Now, it varies by country and the data that you look at, but perhaps some of the best data that I've seen is coming out of some ICU registries in the UK. And that data would suggest perhaps as high as 67% of patients that end up requiring a ventilator actually die.
67% do not recover.
Yes. Yeah. But having said that, the numbers vary widely. Anecdotally, we see some hospitals that are doing better. And I have reasons to be optimistic. We're working really hard at my own home institution at the University of Michigan. And I by far do not want listeners to think that just because a patient is hospitalized, that is not at all necessarily a death sentence. Mm-hmm. But it obviously is concerning. Yeah.
Sure. John Hamilton, how does this compare to what you've learned in your reporting?
Well, the study that Dr. Han cited, the UK study, was sort of in the middle of the data that's out there. And I should say that this is all pretty preliminary. I wouldn't say the definitive trial has not been done yet. But I found, out of China, it was could be as low as 15% of people who went on a ventilator survived. And there was a very small study out of Washington State where it was 50%, which is much more encouraging. On the other hand, at the end of the study, a number of the patients were still on the ventilator. So it was like you didn't really know yet what was going to happen.
As with so much else about this disease, it just seems like there's so much unknown. It is still so new, and there's so much research to be done. Let's go to another question, this one from Peter in Albany, next to my hometown of Portland, Oregon.
Do those that survive after being on a ventilator recover to the point they can resume a normal life, or will they struggle for their remaining years?
Dr. Han, what can you tell us about recovery? After people get off a ventilator, the lucky ones who survive, how are their lungs?
Yeah, so this is another really good question. We have to remember this virus has only been on the earth a couple of months, so we really do not have long-term data. In fact, the National Institutes of Health is scrambling right now to start getting studies up and running to get this information out. But the limited data that is coming out of Asia suggests that there is lung impairment. This isn't surprising. We see this with other causes of adult respiratory distress syndrome, which is what this is behaving like. Mm-hmm. Although the good news with ARDS is that many of those patients actually recover farther out, 5 years out, their lung function. So I think there is reason to be optimistic.
Can CAT scans show whether people who come out of this disease having been on a ventilator have damage to their lungs?
So that's another great question. Data coming out of Asia suggests that there is some damage, at least a little bit out. But the interesting thing going on here in the U.S. is that we actually haven't been getting that many CAT scans, in part because of the difficulty getting the CAT scanners cleaned in between patients. In China, they had many hospitals that were all COVID. So it was okay. But here in the U.S., we're still trying to take care of patients with non-COVID related problems. And so in many cases, we just don't have a lot of that nice CT imaging data available.
Oh, that's really interesting. If you have a question for Dr. Han or NPR's John Hamilton, send it to us at npr.org/nationalconversation or ask us on Twitter using the hashtag NPRConversation. This next question comes from Susan in Johns Island, South Carolina, and it's also a medical equipment question. Let's listen.
I have used a CPAP for 15 years for sleep apnea. Is there any way using a CPAP could be useful when a ventilator is not available?
John, what can you tell us about CPAP machines?
Well, I can tell you that Susan has just walked into the middle of a very big debate going on right now.
Thanks, Susan.
And, you know, these machines do, you know, people with sleep apnea, like Susan, use them. They do push air into the lungs. And so in that way, you know, theoretically, they can be helpful. But on the other hand, they are certainly not a ventilator. They are not taking over breathing the way a breathing machine can't. So there seems to be a camp that says, well, you know, if you can't get a ventilator, this might help. The other side of that is people are concerned that these machines might cause what they call aerosolization of the virus. So it might contribute to its spread. It might get into the air and make things more dangerous for people around.
Dr. Han, I understand that operating a ventilator usually requires a rigorous, specialized training program. Now that demand is so high, are healthcare workers getting a crash course, or are people operating ventilators without proper training, or how is that working?
So it's another really interesting question. You have to remember that taking care of patients in the ICU require massive teams. So it's doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, techs, that all have very high levels of training. So what I'm seeing is that we are shifting, we are redeploying people into new areas that perhaps they haven't worked in. And so we're trying to keep a couple really key experts in the field and kind of have them oversee perhaps a slightly green army underneath them. But that's kind of how our hospitals are operating right now.
And how short are you on supplies, or do you have what you need right now?
I would say the PPE problem, the personal protective equipment problem, is massive. It's still raging. We do not have enough. And a lot of organizations have been asking central administration for some type of transparent organized supply chain. So I that's still clearly a problem. The ventilator issue really varies from hospital to hospital and state to state. And I think within each state, governors are working hard to shift ventilators from hospitals without a lot of cases to hospitals that really need it most.
That is Dr. Meilan Han and also NPR's John Hamilton answering your questions about ventilators and the impact of COVID-19 on the lungs.